Support for this episode of Youth Culture Matters comes from videoblocks.com. Get studio quality video footage, audio, and images for a fraction of the cost with Videoblocks. Visit them online at videoblocks.com/CPYU.
Prayer is essential to the Christian life. As followers of Jesus, we must make the same request as one of his early disciples. Lord, teach us to pray. Once we learn how to pray, what should we be praying for? In today's incredibly confusing world, one of our primary prayer subjects must be our children and teens. What would happen if, as individuals and churches, we would begin to engage in daily prayer for each and every young person in our congregation? We'll be talking to Tony Souter about the Pray For Me campaign and how we can build our churches into communities that pray for children and teens on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Number 50. What a great number. I don't know what is so attractive about the number 50. I guess it's a round number, half of 100. But Jason, this is episode number 50 we're recording of Youth Culture Matters.
Man. Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's so cool. 50.
Yeah. We've gotten to 50. I'm not going to do the math on how many hours this has taken us, but hopefully it's time well spent and invested. Well, I'm hearing that. Yeah. And we've gotten some great numbers on listens, great feedback. I'm hearing it now when I travel.
I know, that's great. Yeah. Well, we've gone from, like, what, three listeners, the three of us, to a few thousand, thousands who have listened, but something like 1,000 listens a week, right in the very first week of the release.
His math is so messed up. Chris, correct
it's
his
West
math.
Coast
what
math.
Is it? Yeah, it's West Coast
math. Hey, it's West Coast math.
Yeah. Hey,
yeah. No,
you're just randomly throwing numbers out. You have no idea.
Randomly throwing numbers out.
Well, three
out.
People? Three? Was it dead? Well,
he was joking. It was just the three of us.
I know he's joking. But you checked the numbers recently, and we're over 100,000, right?
Over 100,000 total listens.
Yeah. So. And getting about 1,000.
That's where all my hours have gone. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Is that coffee in your mug there? Coffee, Christmas eggnog? What are you drinking there?
It is coffee, although Christmas eggnog doesn't sound half bad right now. I like a good eggnog.
Yeah.
Do
okay.
you?
Well, the kind of stuff you buy at the Quick Mart, sure.
Oh man!
You know,
let me ask this. Well, like one of the when I don't know if this was true for anyone else, but when I was a kid, the thing that would signify that it was the holiday season was eggnog in the store.
Yeah.
That for me was like, oh my gosh, Christmas is gonna be here any time. Now, I mean, eggnog is in the store by like, it tries to beat pumpkin spice latte, but whatever.
Yeah. Why? And you know, when you think about it, when you just stop and you think about words. You know, that are familiar to you, have been familiar your whole life, but then you step back and you think about them, especially as it relates to food, you're wondering, why did I even try that in the first place? Like anything named nog. What is nog?
That's a good question.
I don't know. We have to look that up. What is nog? Yeah. Okay, well, this begs a question. Christmas, we're just, you know, we're getting there. People who are listening when this podcast is released, we're right there. Favorite Christmas food. What is it that you really look beyond eggnog? Okay, maybe it is eggnog. I don't know. Food, drink, whatever. Favorite Christmas food that you remember from childhood that's just awesome?
Chris?
Yeah. Chris, let's go to Chris here.
Favorite Christmas food. Probably cookies.
Yeah, is there a certain cookie you really love?
Anything that's not chocolate.
Okay, this is not surprising.
Said no one ever.
I don't want to dig deeper into this.
Well, chocolate. I'm not a big chocolate fan, but I love cookies, and so.
I like how Jason. Did you hear how Jason said no one ever?
Said no one ever.
Right. We need to eliminate that from the vocabulary.
When I'm involved.
Well, when you're involved, whenever you're involved, said Chris Wagner.
Yeah.
Or said Chris Wagner never. I mean, because you stand out from everybody.
That's true.
On everything, like the opposite.
You know what? A food growing up as a kid, now that I think about that, I associate with Christmas and New Year's holiday parties. I don't know why. It's just probably because the parties that I went to always had them. Not that you can't have them other times of the year, but those little.
I can't wait for this.
They're like the tiny party meatballs that have like. It's like half barbecue sauce, like grape jelly mixture.
Sweet and sour.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, those are like little wieners or something.
Like, but
no, they're meatballs.
But cocktail meatballs are. Yeah, there's actually grape jelly put in some of those recipes.
Oh no, I don't know. Okay, I sorry.
Anyways, that's one of the foods I think about as a kid. Like I always associate those with Christmas and New Year's parties.
I'm speechless because I'm
surprise, surprise.
Well, I'm trying to. I don't think I've ever seen these things.
They're usually in like
I'm
a crock pot.
That that's the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And there's a thing of toothpicks
like toothpicks
next to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are those like sweet and sour meatballs? Is that what they call it?
Maybe I don't know what the name.
Yeah.
For those
I mean, I've
be.
Heard of sweet and sour meatballs, but not.
But
sweet
it's not
and sour
like Chinese sweet and sour chicken flavor.
Yeah.
It's different than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just have to say this is a really weird conversation.
It is, yeah,
to it.
Yeah.
Just listening to it.
Sorry, listeners.
Do you put peanut butter on them because there's jelly in them? Do you do that or no? Okay. It wouldn't surprise me if you did that. Jason, what's your thing? What?
Sugar cookies.
They are good,
nothing better than I think it's my grandmother's, but my mom used to always make these sugar cookies. And even to this day, I ask for her to send the cookies up to the Northwest because – I don't make them as well as my mother. Now, I have the same recipe, the same ingredients, but there's just something about my mom sending those cookies that's just – it just signifies Christmas. It
right,
just
it's Christmas.
Like,
it's not Christmas unless
you – Oh, yeah, and they just have this taste and this smell, and it's like I cherish each and every cookie I eat. So based on
our delivery systems that are out there, I won't mention what all the options are. I don't know what options she uses to send them. Are they actually cookies when they arrive, or do you get a box of crumbs?
No, they're cookies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because even if they were crumbs, I can see you devouring the crumbs, like taking a straw and just, you know, bending over the box, the open box, and whenever you get a hankering glass of milk next to it, you know, you just inhale those things.
Not like that.
Orally.
There's something sad about a broken cookie, and I just can't eat it. I've got to be the one that breaks it.
Yeah, well, that's a shame.
But I do know, if I remember correctly, your favorite was fruitcake, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're still working on the one that somebody sent us a year ago.
Well,
it's awesome.
They last forever.
Oh, they're great. You know, and just they get. Maybe we have a small chainsaw in here we use to slice it off whenever we get hungry for it. But that candied fruit. I don't know why people don't like that. Honestly, I don't understand. I guess it's because I grew up with it, yeah.
Oh.
See, my dad was a pastor, and Christmas was great for us because everybody brought food. It's like being the school teacher. Everybody brings you food. And I know, you know, I got two kids who are school teachers. Now, I'm guessing some of the food that they get is suspect because you're not sure who had their hands in it. You know, when they were creating this. But we would get boxed things, baked things, cookies, chocolates. You know, I remember the Whitman sampler, that coming, you know, and just how much fun that was to choose your chocolate. And then the fruitcakes. We got lots of fruitcakes. So
and
I think
with
great.
Fruitcakes, you know, the flavor can be hit or miss. You can have good fruitcakes. But I think people's holdup is the texture because it's you've got – you know, it's a bread cake type thing, but then you've got nuts and the jelly squishy type stuff in it. I think the texture just can really throw people off.
Yeah. Why not just eat a meatball that's got jelly in it?
No, I don't think it's texture. I think it's just simply it's a fruitcake. That's the issue.
Well, you know, we always say don't knock it till you try it. And last year somebody sent us a fruitcake, and Chris tried it, and he was okay with it. But he did mention a couple of podcasts ago, I think, that we did clear that thing out of the refrigerator 6 months later, what was left of it.
Yep, it did eventually. What was left of it eventually did get tossed when I think we had to de-thaw the refrigerator because it was getting too iced up or whatever.
Oh, yeah. When you go into the store there in Spokane, Jason, do you see fruitcakes? Is that a Northwest thing?
No, it's a Northeast.
So if I say, it's a Southern thing, too. So if I say to you a Claxton fruitcake, do you have any notion of what that is?
Nope.
I think that's
the
brand. So you see, we were in the grocery store the other day, and they had a light Claxton fruitcake. They had a dark Claxton fruitcake, and they're actually encased in – they look like elongated bricks. You could probably build a house out of them.
Yeah.
If you had enough, you could construct a house. Insulated well, and, man, that'd be a dream house, I guess. I don't know. You could just – you get hungry, you just get a fork or a knife and go at it. So – yeah, fruitcake. Well, it's lots of good food. We're getting ready to try all this. So, well, good. Hey, before we move on to the topic of the day, I just want to make mention a big thank you to our sponsor for this podcast, VideoBlocks. And they are offering a triple bundle of video, audio, and images for the price of one, $149. And that's a good deal for our Youth Culture Matters listeners. VideoBlocks provides great studio quality stock footage, audio, and images for a fraction of the cost. You can download all the stock media your heart desires from their member library. They have over 150,000 videos, over 100,000 audio clips, and over 400,000 images. It's all royalty-free. We know churches and youth ministries are using these things for their projects, you know, the things they're putting together there, the media stuff that they want to use. So, check it out. New content is being added regularly, so there's always something fresh to download. And all you have to do is go to videoblocks.com/CPYU to get all that stock footage, audio, and the images you can imagine for just $149. That's VideoBlocks, VideoBlocks.com/CPYU to get this special deal for $149. So thanks to the folks at VideoBlocks for sponsoring this episode of Youth Culture Matters. Let's move on, Jason, to the topic of the day. We're going to talk about prayer, and we're going to talk to a friend of ours, Tony Souter, who is involved with the Pray For Me campaign, something he was involved in creating about 3 years ago. I'm very excited about it. I know some about it. I've seen the resources. They are great. And we want to hear more about Tony's heart on this and how that works. But I want to ask you guys, do you guys use printed prayers or prayer guides to help you organize your prayer life? Have you done that? Is there a season when you've done that? And if so, what are some of the tools you've used that you've found to be helpful?
I have. It depends on the season. Typically, the best thing for me, though, is a journal, something that tracks what my prayers are and what I would like to see done. So it gives me a glimpse of where I was several years ago or a few months ago or a few days ago, and it just allows us to be reminded of what God's doing in our life and the lives of those around us. And so often you can be praying and not think that anything's changed, but then you go back in your journal and think, oh my gosh, there's been a lot of change. So it's not a particular thing that I read, but a lot of times it's the stuff that I'm writing down from my own prayers.
Okay.
That typically be the thing that I think guides and directs and allows me to celebrate. So it's not just petitions, it's also praise. There's this dynamic of, Lord, I'm so grateful for what has happened.
Yeah, we need to keep a record because we forget so easily.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you read the Old Testament, you see the history of Israel is a history of God's faithfulness and humanity's forgetting. And so, you know, we have to learn from that history and realize. So that's a great, you know, the journal thing is a good thing. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, for me, it's seasonal in terms of whether I'm actually using written prayers. But the two that come to mind that I've used, you've pushed me onto Scotty Smith's prayer books.
Right, everyday
those
prayers.
Those have been very, very helpful. He's been a podcast guest before. But then also, I think it was about a year ago now, a little bit over a year ago, I bought the Book of Common Prayer be familiar with kind of liturgical prayer, praying through the church calendar. And so that's opened my eyes to some stuff that, you know, with my church background growing up, I was not familiar with. So that's been helpful, just kind of thinking through, you know, liturgy, thinking through. It's a way of praying with the saints, not only just, you know, there's intention about what prayers are said during what time of the year, but there's also this sense that these are prayers that have been prayed for, you know, the last 500 years or so, so that's pretty neat too.
Yeah. Well, you just won some points there. I didn't know this about you. Where do you keep it hidden? Is it at
it's
home?
It's on
or?
My book stand.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I actually grew up in a small denomination for the first 14 years of my life called the Reformed Episcopal Church. My dad was a pastor in that, and we used the Book of Common Prayer. And I still have it. You know, when I was confirmed in the faith, I received a copy of that. I have it in my pile of things that I use, you know, in the morning, devotional things that I use it on the shelf next to my chair there at home. And actually has my name embossed. Is that what you call it? Embossed, printed on the front in gold letters, you know. Walter Mueller III. Yeah, that was from my younger years when people always called me Walter. But people are critical of, I think a lot of younger people or people who have not grown up in a church where printed prayers are used are critical of that because they think that it's rote, it's repetitious, it must be meaningless. But the reality is, for me, it has great meaning because it reminds you to be well-balanced and well-rounded in your prayer life. So I'm guessing you're finding that to be the case mm-hmm. as you use that. So it's wonderful. Scotty Smith's prayer book, Everyday Prayers. He also has the book Every Season Prayers, which is an occasional thing. Everyday, the first prayer book I mentioned is the one that I use every day. And then, you know, there's another one that's been really helpful to me, and that's called The Valley of Vision, which is a Puritan prayer book, where the language is Old English, but man, is it rich, and it's categorized, there's titles in there, and I've been pleased to see that many people I know, when I mention that book, you know, they'll look at you and say, yeah, I use that too, and I had not heard of it till, you know, probably 10, 15 years ago, and it's been a regular help to me. So yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong, and I think everything right with praying printed prayers. And that's what Tony Souter is going to help us understand with some of the resources that they've created at the Pray For Me campaign, where they've actually created resources to help us pray systematically and in balanced ways for our children and our teens, something that's very necessary. So I can't wait to come back and talk to Tony. So stick with us, and we'll be right back and talk to Tony Souter. If you've ever been in need of a soundbite, video, or image, you need to visit videoblocks.com/CPYU and learn how to receive a special membership offer created just for our podcast listeners. Go to videoblocks.com/CPYU to get all the stock footage, audio, and images you can imagine for just $149 for an entire year. At VideoBlocks, you can download all the stock media your heart desires from their member library. You have access to 150,000 videos, 100,000 audio clips, and 400,000 images. All content is royalty-free, so you can use it for commercial and personal projects. New content is being added to VideoBlocks regularly, so there is always something fresh to download. Youth workers and churches have found VideoBlocks to be a valuable resource for all their video, audio, and image needs. To learn more and to take advantage of this triple bundle for the low price of $149, visit videoblocks.com/CPYU. That's VideoBlocks.com/CPYU. Well, we're pretty excited to have Tony Souter with us today. And Tony runs a campaign called the Pray For Me campaign. We're going to hear about that. But before we do that, we always talk about where people are from, Tony. Don't say anything, because I don't think Jason knows where you are. But I'm going to give Jason a little quiz here to see, you know, how good is his geographic knowledge of the United States is. So where Tony is right now, Jason, I'm going to give you three hints, all right? So you see if you know where this is. The first hint is world's first franchise Coca-Cola bottling plant. Second hint is moon pies. Third hint, this is a good one. I mean, you'll probably get it with this, Jason, knowing you. The International Towing and Recovery Hall of Fame and Museum. You know where he is?
Oh, that last one gave it away. It's Chattanooga. Chattanooga, Tennessee.
You knew ahead of time. Because number one, that was way too fast for you to Google it. We would have needed 5 to 10 minutes because you would have asked me to repeat the name of the place again. But yeah, that place is there, Tony. Have you been to that museum? I have not been in it, but I've been past it.
I pass by it all the time, but I've never been in it.
So. Yeah. So I've been down to Chattanooga several times to Covenant College up on the mountain there, and then. What's the organization, Hope for the Inner City? Are you familiar with those folks? So been down there for a mission trip. Yeah.
Very good friends with them.
Good folks. So you're in a great place. What's Chattanooga like right now?
Crystal blue skies outside. Very nice outside for those that enjoy a little crisp. It's not as crisp as the upper northeast. Northwest, excuse me, or even the Northeast.
Yeah.
But it's really beautiful out right now. It's been overcast. I mean, typically it's kind of gray here in the winter, but it's beautiful right now.
And you actually, people can't see this, but you turned your camera and you pointed out the window. You're not in your house. You're up in some kind of high rise.
I am. We fortunately have a very nice office in the ninth floor. It's connected with First Presbyterian Church here in Chattanooga. There's a building that was next to the church years ago that was a hospital that they ended up purchasing, and we're on the ninth floor.
No kidding.
It's pretty nice.
Do you know any that this is the way my mind works? As soon as you say that, I'm going, okay, you're in an old hospital. What happened in that room that you're in now? I mean, was there anything interesting going on in there?
There's no lingering stories that I know about. So.
Okay. If I see anything moving around behind you, I'll let you know while we're chatting here. So, yeah, we can all see each other.
Please.
Yeah. Well, Tony, I'm so glad you're here. And, you know, people in the world of youth ministry are most likely familiar with you either being involved with a Pray For Me campaign or perhaps seeing you at any number of youth ministry events over the years. I know that, you know, you walk through exhibit halls and there it is. There's Tony, there's the Pray For Me campaign. Tell us a little bit about the campaign. Tell us what the campaign is.
Well, it's really just a simple way of making it possible for young people to connect with the older adults or any adults in the church. A simple way, simple and natural way of making sure that every young person that's connected to the church will have multiple adults investing in their lives, beginning with prayer. It really started, we launched it in January of 2014. But before that, it was really prompted through some of the sticky faith research that shows that 40 to 50% of young people are drifting from their faith in the church after they graduate. But also that those that stay connected to the church tend to flourish and stay connected to the church when they have multiple adult believers investing in their lives. Mm. And when we came across that research, along with just the burden of wanting to see interconnected relationships in the church for years, we started asking the question, how can we get more adults connect with more teenagers more naturally than ever before? That's not a new question for most people that have been involved in youth ministry, but for us, it was one that we weren't willing to let go when we saw that research. And as a result, the Pray For Me campaign basically became the fruit of that, asking that question pretty relentlessly over a couple of years.
Well, let me back up and just ask you about you. You know, okay, so 2014, the Pray For Me campaign gets started. How did you you know, tell me a little of your story that led to the burden and the passion you have for this. What was your journey?
Well, yeah, I've been in youth ministry for about 30 plus years. Been the director of the Chattanooga Youth Network, which is a ministry that really comes alongside the church to help the church bless the next generation by working with youth leaders. Coming alongside of youth leaders, connecting, coaching, and caring for youth leaders throughout the Chattanooga, North Georgia region, and been doing that for 23 years. April will be kind of the mile marker for 24 years. And so been involved with youth ministry for a long time, and from especially working with leaders through those years, and seeing just the disconnect in churches between generations, and seeing the desperate need of young people to have adults investing in their lives in a natural way. I've seen a lot of times where we're trying to connect adults with young people, and it's unnatural, and it feels awkward, and people back away from awkward. But over those years, seeing that disconnect and really knowing what it's meant for my own life to have older adults that had invested in me early on, and even through the aspect of prayer, that's one of the parts of my story, is that I remember coming to know Christ in came from a non-Christian family, was invited to a church from a teacher in high school, and while I was going to that church, this whole church is praying for me because it was a small rural church, and they're all praying for me. I have no idea that they are. I come to know Christ. And then shortly after that, the weeks following that, every time I walked into the church, people would say, "We've been praying for you." And I had no idea. And that was some of the kind of the mile markers and milestones in my life, just to say, you know, this prayer aspect is a key component. And it really tenderized the hearts of those adults towards me from the very beginning.
Mm, I like that.
Wow. I'm curious then how this all works, because it sounds like it's much more than just praying, although praying is the key component in the midst of this, but there's a lot of relationship. I hear you talking a lot about the relationship that's formed between one and another. So maybe talk a little bit about how that comes into play, how that works out.
Absolutely. The way it really works is that we try to make it so that students can actually invite three adults from three different generations to be their prayer champions for a school year. Now, we know that that adults care about the next generation, but many times they just don't know how to get there. They just don't know how to get connected with a young person in a natural way. And we know that young people love to be cared for by adults, but they don't know how to get to them. And the Pray For Me campaign basically bridges that gap between them. And the way it works is that, say we're launching the Pray For Me campaign in First Church. And at First Church, we say, we're launching the Pray For Me campaign. We want every one of our students to have three adults from three different generations to be their prayer champions for a school year. So I'm going to make up a number here. We have 25 students in our ministry. That means we need 75 adults that would be willing to be prayer champions for our students. If you're willing to be a prayer champion, sign up in your bulletin, sign up in your Sunday school class. Basically, you create a pool of adults that are willing to be prayer champions for those young people. And so then we say in 3 weeks' time, we're going to actually launch it in the fellowship hall or the gym or wherever you would launch it. And at that day, all the students are there. The prayer champions are there, the adults that are going to be prayer champions for the students. And you'd divide those adults into three different groups. And then the students would actually go and invite one adult from each one of those groups to be their prayer champions for the school year. And after that takes place, what happens is that they'll get a picture taken. And this is my prayer team for the year. And then at least one of those adults will actually pray for that student that day to kind of seal the deal. And then the adults will start praying for the student through the year.
Mm. Wow. And do those three adults gather and pray together? Or are they praying separately throughout the year, or it's up to them? How does that?
It's definitely, great question. They definitely are praying separately for sure. But then also there'll be times, depending on the church and how well the church does as far as giving opportunity for them to gather together to pray. Many times those adults may have are in the same walking patterns in their church, and so they'll connect and pray. But a lot of times what happens is it's not just connecting the adults with the student. It's actually creating community across generations between the 20s and 30s and the 40s and 50s and 60s and above. So a lot of times they're not in the same walking patterns in their church either. And so what happens when those three different generations become prayer champions for the student, what happens is that you're building community all across the board in the church. And so sometimes, depending on how the church operates, they can actually create other times to gather to pray. But they'll definitely pray that first time, and then they'll probably have a couple times during the year that they gather all together. But then but they'll be praying along on their own throughout the year.
So as I'm listening to you talk about this, I'm hearing a couple of great benefits. There are many more than just the two I'm thinking about right now. One is you've got people connected intergenerationally. The other thing is that you've got intercession taking place. And, you know, we understand the power of prayer. Maybe we don't understand the power of prayer because we don't pray enough. But when we pray enough, we understand the power of prayer. Let me back up, because part of that, and you said something earlier where it's remedying this disconnect between the generations. You've got a remedy here, but as you've been in youth ministry for a while, I would love to hear your observations and your wisdom on why you think this disconnect has occurred. And specifically, is there anything that we are doing as people in youth ministry that facilitates this even further without even knowing it?
Well, as you would know, there's several things that – well, not just several. There's numerous things that have taken place throughout the last 20 or 30 years where the church has kind of created these compartments. Mm-hmm. And we use the term siloed ministries, and they're you come into the church and everybody from that was in that car, no matter what age, they all go to their separate places and they reconvene afterwards. That's part of it. And some of it's just a natural reality is that we gravitate to people that are like us. And so whether the siloing was part of it or not, we would tend to do that unless there was a natural way for us to connect outside of that. So I think that that's been part of it. And if we're not intentional, which most churches get into whatever groove that they're in, it could be called a rut, but whatever lane they're in, and kind of stay there until something forces them outside, or they know that they want something different, but they just don't know how to get there. And what the Pray For Me campaign actually gives them a simple way of getting out of that groove or that lane or those segmenting of the congregation in a way that is pretty natural, because it's rooted in prayer. It means that it makes it accessible to every adult in the church. There's not an adult in the church that says, I can't do that. And if they can't, then there's other issues going on there, especially because we made it we knew that adults would say yes to being prayer champions, but we also knew that if they didn't have a structured way of pulling off their prayer commitment, what would happen is it would tend to fade like a New Year's resolution. And so I wrote basically a prayer guide that helps them to pray scripture for the students in seven essential categories. And the categories, they come from scriptures. Luke 2:52, Jesus grew in wisdom and favor with God and man. So wisdom and favor are two of the essential categories that were kind of lining up, that they would pray through those passages that correlate with that. Then the other five come from 1 Timothy 4:12. Don't let anybody look down on your youth, but in your speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, set an example for the believers. So those seven categories, in my mind, I mean, there's lots of other things you can pray for, but if you're kind of generally speaking, you're looking through those lenses of those seven categories, it covers most everything in life. And so it gives them some tracks to run on, but from a biblical perspective, and basically in a prayer guide, I found passages that correlate with those categories and then turn those passages into prayer to make it easy for the adult to pray scripture for the young person as they go through the year.
What about specific requests? Are the relationships building enough where the students feel the freedom to go to the adults and the adults feel the freedom to go to the students?
They are. developing enough relationship for that to happen. And that varies. I mean, obviously, not all three of the prayer champions may be at the same place as far as their willingness and confidence to go engage with a young person. But one of the beautiful pieces about the Pray For Me campaign is that when a student comes up and says, Walt, will you be my prayer champion? And you're already a yes because you're in the room. Everybody in the room's a yes. There's no no's in the room. So you say yes, and what happens is then when you see Billy in the hall, you're not wondering, should I go talk to Billy? Because Billy's already invited you into his life because he's invited. And so you have confidence to go talk to them, as opposed to the way that we do it numerous times in the past is that we assign a young person with a student. A lot of times this young person doesn't even, I mean, an adult with a student. And a lot of times the student doesn't even know the adult. The adult knows that he's been assigned Billy to pray for him, but the student doesn't know that Walt's designed to pray for him. So then it feels awkward for you to go talk to him because there's not a relationship. Mm-hmm. So those relationships are growing to be able to ask for specific requests. And what we're finding with the adults is that all of a sudden now there's this gateway to be able to connect in a natural way with the young person and ask those specific requests. But most of the time, students are going to say one of three things. They're going to say, I've got a test coming up, so it's going to be academics. I've got a game coming up, it's going to be athletics. And if they really know the adult well, they might start talking about their relationships, and I call it the three A's, athletics, academics, and associations. But the associations usually doesn't come until they know that adult fairly well.
Mm. That's good. This is a good conversation. We're talking to Tony Souter, who's running the Pray For Me campaign. And I know many youth workers are aware of this. If you're not, you should be. It's a wonderful campaign that you can put into your church to connect generations and to facilitate intercession on behalf of kids who definitely, like the rest of us, need to be prayed for. So we're going to come back, talk to Tony some more, and hear more about the Pray For Me campaign. So stick with us, and we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Are you interested in bringing CPYU to your church, school, or community? A big part of our ministry is the on-site seminars we conduct in dozens of settings every year. CPYU seminars are designed to encourage and educate your audience on a variety of youth culture issues. Every seminar is designed to be informative, practical, and hope-filled. If you want to learn more about our CPYU seminars, available speakers, and the many seminar topics and options in our growing seminar lineup, go to our CPYU homepage at cpyu.org. Click on the seminar option on the menu bar at the top of the page, and you can learn more about how to schedule a CPYU speaker and seminar for your parents, youth workers, and educators.
Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. We're here with Tony talking about the Pray For Me campaign. And I know at the break, while you had discussed something off air that I think is important for us to ask on air. So maybe if you want to go ahead and ask that same question.
Yeah, I was really interested in Tony's personal story. He talked about coming out of a non-believing family and getting to this church and then this rural church, and then people would approach him and say, hey, every week, you know, been praying for you. You know, what is that like as a young person to have, and someone who's not walking with Christ or in a relationship with Christ, to have an adult, maybe who you don't know well, come up to you and say, hey, I'm praying for you? How do you respond to that? Because I think your response would be indicative of what most kids would feel.
I think that for me, at that juncture, I had just come to know Christ, and so Christ was very, very important to me. I mean, it was new. My relationship was new. It was vibrant. I was growing every week. I was learning new things and about how to walk with the Lord because I didn't have any of that background. And so when adults came up to me, I was extremely encouraged that when they would come up and say, hey, look, we've been praying for you. We're so thankful that you've come to know Christ. And is there anything we can do to help? But they're fact that they started with prayer, even though I didn't really understand prayer. I understand that you're talking to God, but I didn't really understand how it worked or any of that. I was such a newbie in relationship to following Christ but I was extremely encouraged, and that just it was to me, it was a conveying that we love you and we're glad you're here. And so even though I didn't understand it all, that's what I was hearing, and that's what I was and it made me want to be there more. Mm.
There was a pause right there because I think that what you're doing is so needed and so powerful. And I think one of the dynamics that so often gets missed is the power of prayer. And so I think I'm just curious how this didn't start with relationship and how it started specifically with prayer. Because out of your own story, prayer was a major part of that. What made you or your team realize that prayer really needed to be the central component to this to bridge the gap between one generation and the next?
That's a great question. And in some ways, it's a complicated question, primarily because obviously prayer was a key component of me coming to Christ, but also throughout my Christian life, God has shoved it, not just nudged it, but shoved it to the forefront, and primarily because over the last 21 years, my wife has had some severe health problems, you've gone to 50-plus doctors and you have those guys in your rearview mirror, and most of those guys are saying, hey, we've got the answer to your problem, but they didn't. And so you're always being forced to trust God because you don't know where else to go, because the doctors aren't – the normal places you would go in our culture aren't providing the answer that you need. And so my dependence has been thrust onto the Lord in prayer over the years. And so and also realizing that it's the most basic aspect of the Christian life, that no one comes to know Christ without praying. That's what we do to come to know Christ. I mean, that's the first act that we do. And so it is the core component of being a follower of Christ. And so we realize that it really could be the central connecting point. And when somebody does pray for another person, what happens is this, is that if I'm praying for Jason, what happens is my heart gets bigger towards Jason and towards God in the process. My care factor goes up towards Jason. So if I start with prayer, then what happens is that it changes me in such a way that I want to know what's happening in Jason's life. And so when we're doing this with young people, it becomes the conduit for extraordinary relationship, because that maybe wasn't even there the day before. Because once an adult starts praying for a young person about important things, maybe it's a specific request, or maybe it's just going through and praying about God's favor over their life or wisdom in their life, and that love and faith and purity would be overwhelming to them and really saturating their lives. What happens is they want to see, is that working? They start caring for Billy or Sue or whoever in such a way that their hearts just get large, and they start moving towards that young person. And so, well, I've seen that in my own life, because we've had thousands of people pray for my wife to get better and pray for us over the years. And still in the process, God's in charge, and that's what makes it's a mystery, but there's nowhere else to go. I'm kind of landing with Peter. There's nowhere else to go, and so he's our hope. But we also want the adults in our church to know that there's nowhere else to go, not just for themselves, but for their own kids and their grandkids and their the other people in the church. And it starts with prayer, and really I'm kind of shooting over here to another piece that. It really provides a way for adults to have their own walk with God enriched while they're on mission to care for the next generation. Because when they start praying and using the prayer guide to pray for those young people, what happens is they're growing in their own walk with God, but they would have never signed up for a 13-week course in prayer. Yeah. They wouldn't have done that, but they're doing it for 9 months or a year as they pray for that young person. Anyways, I probably didn't answer. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Well, no, you did. And I think that it almost seems that prayer becomes the way the barrier between the generations is broken down too, because your heart changes, but then that what that also does is it probably compels you or motivates you to talk to that individual in ways that maybe you hadn't prior to that time of prayer, because they've been on thought and they've been in prayer. I would assume that those doors that sometimes, that sometimes get shut between the generations, and a lot of times it's fear, afraid of being embarrassed. It is removed because essentially you've invited them into your space, into your home, and already. And so stepping forward and having those conversations makes it that much easier. That's my assumption.
It's a correct assumption.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Tony, I'm holding the prayer guides, and I'm really impressed with these. I see these, if nothing else, and this is not to diminish the value of the guide, it's to add to it. I'm looking at these and going, man, I could just, these would just, in personal use, get beyond even praying for anybody else, just deepen me in my prayer life. Now, I know the value is much more than that. I'm just telling you there's added value here. We've alluded to that already in terms of enriching our own prayer and devotional lives. But talk about the prayer guides. Tell us about them, what's available and what they cover.
Yeah, there's three different prayer guides. There's one that is what we call the youth edition, which is designed to help adults pray for middle school through college. And then there's one that's pretty much right after we launched the Pray For Me campaign for students. We started getting calls from children's ministers saying, hey, this is great. We're praying for teenagers. That's a big deal, but we need to start earlier. And so I ended up rewriting the prayer guide to aiming lower and giving some different passages and rewriting the prayers and creating one that's adults praying for children fifth grade and below. So at church could actually utilize the Pray For Me campaign from kindergarten through college if they wanted to, really building a whole praying force around every young person that comes through the church. But the last prayer guide is the student prayer guide, which is really designed, and we just revamped that so that it can be used by a student in middle school all the way through college, designed to help them to pray for themselves and their peers. Again, getting at the fact that prayer is the most basic aspect of the Christian life. It is the life breath of the believer, and it's one of the main questions the disciples said, teach us how to pray. They're seeing Jesus pray and his intimacy with the Father. Teach us how to do this. And even though they've seen prayers with all the scribes and the Pharisees, they've seen people praying, but they're seeing something different, an intimacy there. And so part of that, the desire with the student edition, is really to make prayer a key component of the discipleship and the growth of a young person within the church. Mm-hmm.
What's the scope of the campaign right now?
It's grown from the 8 test churches that we started with in 2014, ranging, and those test churches ranged from 50 members to 1,500 members and from 4 different denominations, because we're trying to see, does it work in any setting? And what we're finding is it does. And now from those 8 test churches, there's over 370 churches in 38 states with over, from 15 denominations, with over 30,000 adults that are praying for young people in those churches, which that part blows my mind every time I think about it, because the way it's structured, it creates this exponential effect, because again, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create young people that stay connected to the church and flourish in their faith that tend to have multiple adult believers investing in their lives. So that's what we're trying to solve, utilizing prayer. And so, the Pray For Me campaign basically makes it so that every young person could have, from 6th grade to 12th grade, they could have 21 different adults that have prayed for them in a significant way. If you did it from kindergarten through college, that could be 50-something different adults that have prayed for them and connected with them in a significant way. Mm-hmm. And it's structured differently for children's ministry. You're not going to ask a second grader to go ask 3 adults from 3 different generations to pray for you. But it's structured with a family, which is really, in some ways, it makes it incredibly, I was going to use really poor language there, incredibly cooler. But what
we'll
it does
we'll
is
accept
it really,
that.
Okay, thank you. It accentuates the value of bringing the whole church around the next generation as they come through. Because what happens is a family, I've got twin daughters, they're older than what I'm getting ready to say, but say they were in second grade, we would go up and we'd say, okay, Abby, you're going to go ask Mr. Wald if he'll be one of your prayer champions, but you're going to ask him. I'm there as the gatekeeper. And then we go to the next one and we'll say, Bethany, you're going to ask Mr. Smith. And so she asked. And so we get our three prayer champions, but those three prayer champions are for our whole, both my children. Now, I'm not getting three per children because you'd run out of adults in the church if you did it for every child in the church and then every student. But what happens is that you're creating relationships off the charts. So in my family, there would be 15 relational connections if, just by doing that. But in a student ministry, there's six relationships that are taking place, the student with the three prayer champions, but then the prayer champions with each other as well. So there's all this relational connections that are taking place, but it's rooted in something that's important, prayer, and praying scripture. So
that is awesome.
That's great.
Is it only churches? I mean, do you have stories of anything outside of churches that participate in this?
Yeah, the great question. Yes, the short answer is yes. What we're finding is that the application is going across in multiple different venues. Like, for instance, there's a number of camps that are using it now, using the prayer guide. Again, there's one camp that is using the prayer guide with all their staff. They've got 70-something staff that come in the summer, and so what they do is they get their staff to get three adults from three different generations from their home church to pray for them for the summer. But what the goal of that is that camp sees we want to help these young people to build this network of people that love and support them from their home church. And so they're going to pray for them, but then those adults would be connected with them during the school year as well. So camp's doing it that way. Another camp in North Carolina is using it for their junior staff, using the student guide that they would pray for each other during that summer. Actually, there's the YMCA here in Chattanooga is using it to invite adults that are members of the Y to be prayer champions for kids that are in Y programs, and they have over 450 adults that are praying for kids that are in the Y program here in Chattanooga. So yes, it's being used across the board in multiple settings. There's several kind of kids ministries here in the Chattanooga area. This we're piloting this is that we're actually equipping churches to become prayer champions for these kids that are mostly in the inner city for two reasons. One, that prayer makes a difference for these kids in the inner city. But the second piece is that it allows the adults' hearts get bigger towards these kids that it's kind of like a compassion kid. You've got your little picture of the student, the young person, and they're praying for that young person, but then they realize, okay, that they're the tutoring program's having a get together around Christmas. Well, then they're invited to that, and they actually get to meet the student, the young person. And so we're creating these bridges between churches and these inner city ministries that we haven't seen before. And so utilizing prayer. And that's one of the values of the prayer guide, because it allows them to start praying about important things, even though they haven't seen those students. Mm.
Any other stories that you can share that would, maybe on a more of a micro level, individuals or whatnot?
Yeah, there's a couple. Actually, I got a message from a youth minister in New Mexico on Monday this week. And it is a tragedy. Part of it is a tragedy is that there was actually a school shooting at the school that this guy, most of his kids go to. A 21-year-old dressed up as a student went in and killed two students, tragically killed two students. But there was he actually reached out to me because the grandmother who was in the Pray For Me campaign at his church said, tell me, thank you, because her grandson was in the epicenter of that crisis, but he is actually signed up to be a part of the Pray For Me campaign, and he had a team of people praying for him, and they felt like that it was directly connected with this team of people praying for him that he was kept safe, and that was something unsolicited that he reached out to me from New Mexico this week. probably one of the pieces that has been really neat to watch is that it's changing some of the ethoses of churches. The ethos of churches is being changed. Like, for instance, this one church where the youth leaders kind of reaching out to the neighborhood kids and stuff like that, and what's happening is that the church wasn't really embracing them. And they said, hey, those are Jackie's kids. We're not real. Jackie, take care of them. We've hired you to take care of these kids. And so what took place is that then they launched the Pray For Me campaign. And what happens is that Jackie told me just recently that they don't refer to those kids as Jackie's kids anymore. They're our kids. Because what happens is that once they started praying for them, it changed the way that they viewed them, because they've been invited into those kids' world. They're actually praying for them. And one of the offshoot stories that related to that specific church is that there was one student that was there as a senior, had prayer champions, went off to college the next year, and was finishing up first semester. He saw his prayer champions at church, and he said, they asked how he's doing. He said, well, I'm not going to be able to go next semester. And they said, well, why not? Well, they said, the funny thing is they had this rule that if you don't finish paying for the first semester, they're not going to let you start another semester. And when they found out that, the prayer champions of that student worked together with the church. They ended up paying that student's college tuition so he could go back the next year. And they were committed to making sure he got through school. Looking back at that, we realized that that would have probably never happened because that student wouldn't have been connected with them. He would have been one of Jackie's kids and not connected to the overall body of the church. And it really is revolutionizing his life in a practical way. One of the things I'm learning is that God's more interested in connecting the generations than I ever think that I am. He is so into this happening in the body of Christ that some simple, miraculous things, like, for instance, at one church, this all happened in one church, that because the students are inviting their prayer champions, and there's three different students that I heard testimony of, that each of them had different interests of people that they wanted to learn how to do something. And so they had all invited their different prayer champions, and each one of them had three different ones. But each one of these students had one prayer champion that met a specific desire that they had for something that they were interested in. One was a girl wanted to learn how to sew. One of her prayer champions was a master seamstress. One guy wanted to learn how to do woodworking. Well, it turns out that one of his guys was a master woodworker, had a shop that he was invited into and started mentoring him. Another student was interested in fly fishing. Well, the adult that ended up being the fly fisherman that was connected to him wasn't even going to be a prayer champion, because he said, look, I don't know if I can do this. And his wife said, you can do this. So they got a prayer guide for you. They made it pretty simple. You can do this. And so he ends up signing up. And he is so into fly fishing that he studies streams. And now he's mentoring this young person. But that nobody knew about those interests or needs. But then once they connect with those adults, God knew. And so there's lots of other stories, but so there's some that kind of stand out that God's doing stuff. And he's more concerned about this than even we are.
That is so cool. That I love those, you know, kinds of stories. And I'm sure there's loads and loads more like that, where, you know, these mutual interests. And I'm thinking, as an older guy, bucket list items that these kids have, you know, that adults can help them meet. So, well, Tony, we need to wrap up, but I want to ask about how people can learn more. Where can they go to learn more, to find out about the resources, to sign up, to plug in? How do we do that?
Yeah. Simplest way is to go to our website, PrayForMeCampaign.com, and everything that they would need to know how to launch the Pray For Me campaign or contact us is all right there, PrayForMeCampaign.com.
Great. And as always, we will include all of those links at cpyu.org on the podcast page for this podcast. So if you're streaming it, downloading it from some other site, come back to cpyu.org and you'll get to see all of these links and be able to just click and go right to everything that's been mentioned today. So, Tony, thanks so much. I love your heart on this, and it's always good to hear someone talk about something like this in ministry where there's a lot of passion behind it. And so I love and appreciate your passion, and I think that's infectious. I'm more excited about this than I was before, and I've known about it for a while, but I highly recommend that people get a hold, even just to look at samples of the prayer guides, and I think once you see these, you'll see what wonderful tools they are, and get them and use them in your ministry. So thanks, Tony. Thanks.
Thanks.
Well, it's been a privilege to be part of your podcast, and I love what you guys are doing, and been a fan for a long time.
Thanks. Thanks. Jason, thanks for joining us, and I will say Chris Wagner is our producer on this, so thanks, Chris, for a good job, and we will talk to you next time on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.